What's going on, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? It is a Friday, November 17th, 2023. And I am your host, as always, The Pody. What is going on, people? We are less than a week from Turkey Day. That's right, Thanksgiving. We got the week kicked off last night with Thursday Night Football. I will get into all of that much later. Yeah, Thanksgiving's a great time of the year. Spend time with your family, eat some food, lay on the couch, fall asleep, watch some good football. I'm going to be playing golf at about 8 o'clock in the morning on Thanksgiving with my dad, my brother, and my grandfather, which will be all well and good, but I got to get up at the ass crack of dawn to get out of the house and get over to the golf course, and probably going to freeze my butt off for most of the round, even though the weather is supposed to be like in the 40s or maybe 50s. But early on with no sun, it's going to be brutal. Anyway, I will keep you guys posted on that for next week's episode. We've got the Jets on Black Friday coming up next week, just trying to fast forward here. So I don't think I'll get an episode out on Friday of next week, just because I will be gearing up, ready to go for the first ever Black Friday game. If the Jets beat the Bills on Sunday, that will be a huge game for the AFC East division title, possibly, because we still get to play them two more times. I'm hopeful of my Jets going into Buffalo and beating them, but I'm not going to hold my breath on it or anything. But yeah, with the Bengals losing last night, opens up a path for the Jets to make a move here. And the winner of this Jets-Bills game is back in contention, basically. So we'll get to that. We're going to get to our weekend roundup first. I'll get back to that Ravens and Steelers game in a bit. But without further ado, here we go. Okay, so first up, let's face it, Michigan, they've been in the news for a few weeks now, ever since the sign-stealing scandal and everything else like that. They had their toughest test of the season against Penn State, and it was in Happy Valley, 100,000 whiteout, of course, game, as it is there usually. Tough atmosphere to play in, but Penn State has a brutally pathetic offense. Kind of looks like the Jets and Giants offenses, if you can believe it. That's the best comparison I've got, really. And no Jim Harbaugh in this one, so keep that in mind, right? So their toughest test, they're on the road. Shamar Moore taking over as interim in this one. And what did Michigan do? I parlayed Michigan with the spread and the over, because Michigan had scored 30 straight points in, 12 straight games, I believe. And of course, they didn't, and I lost my bet. But the number three Wolverines pounded the rock and pounded the rock and pounded the rock to a historic level. So they pulled this one out, 24-15. Wasn't all that close. J.J. McCarthy, who's sort of been in the Heisman discussion the last couple of weeks, lost any possible chance to win the award with this game because, like I said, they literally did not throw the ball. Including the final two kneel downs, Michigan ran the ball on its last 32 plays of the game, which is their longest streak of consecutive rushing attempts in any game over the last 20 seasons.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and of course, it's the game that I need them to score points. So they're, of course. It was also the longest streak by a non-service academy since 2018. And I believe it snapped, like I said, a 12-game streak of scoring 30 or more points. Michigan averaged 4.9 yards per carry against what is the Power Five's toughest run defense. And Shamar Moore, the offensive coordinator, was the interim head coach for this game, and he was feeling all the emotions. He was going a little nutty in his post-game interview. Take a listen.
To say that this has been a crazy 24 hours for your guys to win on the road in this environment when there were doubts, Sharon, what does it mean to you?
Well, I thank the Lord. Well, I thank Coach Harbaugh. Fucking love you, man. Love the shit out of you, man. This is for you. of this university, the president, our AD. We got the best players, best university, best alumni in the country. Love you guys. These fucking guys right here. These guys right here, man. These guys did it. These guys did it, man. Talk to him, man. Love you.
Yeah, sorry for the cussing there. I thought I got the bleeped out version. But I think I also I need to correct myself. I think I also called him Shamar Moore, which that was a little bit of a Freudian slip. I believe Shamar Moore is the actor from SWAT, and obviously he's most well known for Criminal Minds. If I'm not mistaken, I'm almost 90% sure of that. So, no, Sharon Moore. I'll correct myself there. So, yeah, he was feeling it a little bit nutty, if you ask me. But let's get over to the flip side of things with Penn State. As for James Franklin, he drops to 4-16 against Ohio State and Michigan since he's been at Penn State, and he had some questionable play calling down the stretch. There was an instance where they punted on 4th-and-2, thought they were going to go for it. They elected not to, but then on 4th-and-6, they decided to go for it later in the game on their own side of the field, and they did not get it. The very first play, that's when Michigan ran it in and pretty much ended the game there with Corum. So just very questionable. I've never thought highly of James Franklin, never liked him, never really thought much of him as a coach, didn't think he was that good. And fast forward to, I don't know if this was Sunday or Monday, but feeling the pressure, obviously, as most coaches who are possibly on the hot seat will do, James Franklin fired his offensive coordinator. And now what that does, we've seen the Bills do it. They fired Ken Dorsey. I'll get into that a little bit later. All that can do is buy you time because that takes a little bit of the pressure off because people want somebody to answer for the losses and things going awry and not working. And the only other thing besides firing the head coach has to make some sort of move, show the boosters, show the fans that they're trying to do something. So they fired their offensive coordinator. And will it get better? Probably not. Okay, speaking of coaches getting fired, it's that time of year. Boise State fired their head coach, Andy Avalos. Texas A&M also fired Jimbo Fisher. And oh, baby, is it a cautionary tale. I was telling my folks about this, and anybody that would listen, this is so staggeringly unbelievable. So Jimbo's buyout is $77.6 million, which is the largest in college football history by a lot. The previous biggest buyout was Auburn, who paid Gus Malzahn $21.4 million a year ago, which seems like a discount at this point. So here's some of the numbers. $20,000. Let's start with that. That is what Jimbo Fisher made for his very first paid coaching job when he was the offensive coordinator at Samford in 1991, the 91-92 season, okay? I was born in 92, so just think about that for a second. Now here's another number, fast forward to now, $26,301. That is what Jimbo Fisher will get paid every single day over the next 8 years to not coach. To not have a job. For the next 8 years, every single day, he's making $26,301. He could go play golf every single day. He could sit at home on the couch. He could do anything he wants. He could go get another job, and now he's getting double pay. I mean, it's limitless. This man is going to make over $26,000 a day for 8 straight years.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. So, yeah, Jimbo Fisher is living the life. And I get it. Coaches want to coach. It's in his blood. It's in his DNA, right? So he's obviously not happy that he's out of a job. And he's going to, I'm sure, try to go get another job somewhere. They've had the best recruiting class the last couple of years. It's just, for whatever reason, his quarterbacks have really not panned out. And it's been a large part of their downfall. All right. So 2 days after Jimbo Fisher gets fired, on Monday, Mississippi State fired their head coach, Zach Arnett, which is very shocking because Texas A&M played Mississippi State on Saturday. They won 52-10 or 51-10. Jimbo Fisher then gets fired. It's very tough to fire a coach after you win 51-10, but Texas A&M, they didn't care. They did it. And then Mississippi State fired Zach Arnett, which this is a tough spot because Arnett was in his first year, probably a little bit in over his head, taking over in a very difficult situation for Mike Leach after his tragic passing, which came out of, you know, left field. So they had no choice. It was a last minute thing. They just decided to stay internally and promote their defensive coordinator. So very tough blow for Arnett. Just a tough situation for anybody. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's a bad coach or anything like that. It was a very difficult situation to be in for sure. So let's get to some other scores around the league. By the way, we have a new number one in the CFP. Georgia and Ohio State have flipped there after Georgia's dominance over number nine, Ole Miss, 52-17. I almost bet on Ole Miss in this game. Luckily, I didn't because it was not even close. You had number one Ohio State. They took care of Michigan State, but Michigan State's in shambles, 38-3. You had, of course, I gave you the Michigan score. Number four, Florida State. They continue to just keep winning. They're probably right now, they're the fourth best team, but it's like them and Washington. I would almost consider putting Washington ahead of them for the CFP if both of them go undefeated. Washington, in my opinion, has had a tougher schedule. Florida State has just gotten by a couple of teams they really should have beat. Boston College, Miami, they should probably do better against. There's some other ones in there I can't think of off the top of my head that were a lot closer than they should have been. So then there's Washington, who I just mentioned. They beat number 18, Utah. That one was pretty close, but in the end, Washington pulled it out 35-28. Number six, Oregon and USC. That one went about as expected. It's another loss for USC. What was the final on that? Give me one second. That was a late game. That's why. Give me one sec. Sorry about that. There it is. Oregon won 36-27. How many is that, like four straight losses for USC? Honestly, they have just been in shambles. I know they've lost four out of five. The lone win in that stretch coming in a 50-49 win over Cal. That is just staggering. Yeah, and before that, look at these scores. They've lost four out of five. They beat Cal by one. That was their lone win. Otherwise, they'd had five straight. And then before that, they beat Arizona by two. They almost collapsed against Colorado, won that game by seven. That is staggering. Their only two blowout wins were week one against Stanford and week two against Arizona State. Wow. Every other game, they've just given up points on points on points. Who else? We had number seven, Texas. They survived TCU. TCU had a crazy comeback, ended up sending this game to overtime, and then on fourth down, fourth and goal, Texas got a stop against TCU. They had to try to flick it to the end zone, and it was like basically a sack at that point. So there's that. And then don't look now, but lurking at number eight in the country, we have Alabama, and they are just waiting and salivating for one of these teams to lose. Unfortunately, they can't pass Texas right now because Texas beat them. So they're behind Texas. Oregon with that one loss, them and Washington, they're going to have to play each other for a Pac-12 title, you would think. So somebody's going to lose there, possibly. So if Alabama could run the table, win the SEC championship, which is looking quite possible at this point, they could face off against Georgia. And then, of course, you knock off Georgia, Oregon, or more than likely Washington, hopefully for them, would lose. And then you're right in it. Alabama, they routed Kentucky 49-21. That was a game I saw. I should have bet it, and I just didn't. You had number 11, Louisville. They held on to beat Virginia 31-24. Number 12, Oregon State. They beat Stanford 62-17. Number 14, Missouri. Missouri, they smoked Tennessee 36-7. And this is why I think the spread is so high for this Tennessee-Alabama game, sitting at 10.5, even though it's at Tennessee, because Tennessee's coming off this bad loss. I think it could potentially be a good spot for Tennessee. Call me crazy, but I do think they could cover this. I don't think they're going to win, but I don't know. That's an interesting spot for me. It's going to go, I mean, obviously, it's going to go one of two ways, but it's either going to be very close and maybe Georgia just pulls it out, wins by 10 or so, or, you know, we're going to be heading into that fourth quarter with Georgia on upset alert. Yeah, this could go either way. I don't have a great pulse on Tennessee this season at all. Who else? We had UCF 45. This was the shocking one. Oklahoma State, number 15 in the country. They just had that big win against Oklahoma, all that, right? UCF routes them 45-3.
Oh, my God.
That was the craziest score of the entire weekend. You had number 17, Oklahoma. They finally bounced back after a couple straight losses, 59-20 over West Virginia. Number 19, LSU beat Florida 52-35. And, oh, my God, did they ever. Jaden Daniels set all sorts of records. Do I have the numbers on this? I don't even have the numbers on this. He's like the first player in SEC history. He threw for 350. He ran for, 200. I mean, the numbers were absolutely staggering. So I don't have it in front of me, but go look into that if you get a chance. I barely tuned in for that game because other stuff was going on. I wasn't really paying attention. But when I saw the numbers afterwards, I was absolutely stunned. He could win the Heisman at this point. It's very possible. Where else we got? Number 21, Arizona. They held on to beat Colorado on like a last second field goal. Colorado just can't seem to get a win, and they're playing at 10:30 tonight. So I'll definitely check that one out because I didn't get to watch this game against Arizona because it was on the Pac-12 network, which I don't get, unfortunately. I get everything else, but not that. Number 22, Iowa. This was a small spread, Rutgers and Iowa. Of course, the biggest, smallest over-under in history, and it did not cover. The under hit, of course, again. But Rutgers, wow, was this disappointing. 22-0 we lost. Didn't even put up a fight. This just proves that Rutgers is like that fraudulent. I know they're not good. It's nice to know that we got to six wins. We're going to make a bowl and all that, but they're just kind of frauds. We can't beat anybody good. We just get routed. Iowa's not even good, and they destroyed us 22-0. Can't even score up 3 points. Nothing. 0 points. And then at the end, they were about to go in and score, and they would have hit the over, but they just took a knee right around the 5-yard line. So, yeah, that's a brutal loss for Rutgers. And here's the thing. The whole thing about Iowa's offense, they're going to play probably for the Big Ten championship. And you're telling me you're still going to fire your offensive coordinator? I know he's the coach's son and all that, but it is quite comical to think. And I know they have problems on offense, but they're still such a good team. They remind me of the Steelers, right? They can't do a whole lot on offense, but they're finding ways to win because they have a very, very good defense, top five defense and all that stuff. So, you know, the Steelers aren't firing Matt Canada, as far as I know, anytime soon. Maybe after the season they do if they falter. But they're looking like they could go 10-3. They could very well beat Cleveland this weekend as road dogs. I don't know if that spread's changed, but I put in a parlay with the Steelers money line, and I'm loving it. That was even before Deshaun Watson was done for the year. So, yeah, it's crazy, right? So Steelers and Iowa, they kind of remind me very, very – very similar styles of play. Bad on offense, great on defense, and they just continue to find ways to win. And then number 24, North Carolina, beat Duke in double overtime, 47-45. I turned that game on. I must have got an alert on my phone or was checking scores, and I jumped on that and turned that game on, and I was watching the end of that regulation and then both overtimes, and man, was it good. It came right down to the wire, but North Carolina held on for the win. Then you had number 25, Kansas State, beating Baylor 59-25. I have some numbers here, actually. I do have the numbers. Okay, I pulled those up. So first off, I want to talk about, I glanced through the Alabama game, but Jalen Milroe, he's another one. If they didn't bench him and he was putting up some of these numbers early on in the season, my God, he'd be in there for the Heisman race as well. But Jalen Milroe produced 6 touchdowns against Kentucky. And he ran for a crap ton of yards against LSU the game before that. He's just been on fire. Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. had his best game of the season while they cruised past Michigan State. Washington's Michael Penix Jr. threw for 332 yards in their win. And Oregon quarterback Bo Nix, he threw for 411 yards against USC's defense. They fired their defensive coordinator, by the way. I think I mentioned that before the last game, last week, which clearly didn't help. And then, of course, Jaden Daniels, he became the first FBS player to ever throw for 350 while also rushing for 200, finishing with 616 total yards. I said that he became the first SEC player to do that, but if it's the first FBS player, then he's also the first SEC player. The Heisman debate, again, it's tough because Penix is undefeated, but I would give it to Jaden Daniels at this point. After a performance like that, that's staggering to me. That is just incredible. Okay, Jim Harbaugh spoke to reporters on Monday, calling the Wolverines America's team. This was just like a little bit bizarre, and I think he was being a little bit sarcastic and facetious, and I think he's just over the whole thing. But just take a listen to this if you haven't heard it already.
The perseverance, you know, and then the stalwartness of these guys. I mean, yeah, Watson, I would have to say. I mean, everybody. It's got to be America's team. It's got to be America's team. America loves a team that you know, beats the odds, beats the adversity, you know, overcomes with the naysayers and, you know, critics, so-called experts think. That's my favorite kind of team. And yeah, watching it from that view on the television, it was finally people get to see what I see every day, you know, in these players and these coaches.
Okay. So yeah, a little bit bizarre. I think he was just taking on that villain role a little bit and just, I don't know, that just was weird, but I thought it was worth a listen. So this came down the pike yesterday. We now know that Harbaugh, they're not going to take any legal action to try to get this suspension uplifted or anything. He's going to serve the suspension, the remainder of it. So he will be out this week and then, of course, out for the big Ohio State game. There will be no court hearing. This came less than like 24 hours before their lawyers were about to go in front of a judge and try to get this thing overturned or whatever. But they kind of shook hands, came to an agreement. The Big Ten is now dropping everything. The investigation is considered closed. However, an NCAA inquiry remains ongoing. And trust me, this is great publicity for Michigan. It makes them look bad and all that, sure. But the fact that they're undefeated is so intriguing and that they keep winning without Harbaugh. Everybody's going to tune in each week to see if they can continue to win without him and see how they play and see if they make this CFP. Because if they do, that means he'll, I guess, get to coach in the CFP, and then it just will add a whole nother level of intrigue. So there's a lot of layers to this, but I bet you the ratings are skyrocketing with each Michigan game. And we've been talking about it. I've been talking about it on this podcast for, this is at least three weeks, maybe going on a month, that we've been talking about this Connor Stallions thing. And, you know, it comes through the pike. They fired another assistant coach, I believe today, or in the last couple of days, that was actually a former high school coach here in New Jersey that was well-known, and he was coaching at Michigan now because apparently he destroyed a computer, which is, you know, evidence and things of that nature. So a lot of craziness going on over at Michigan, but I think it makes for a very compelling storyline, especially with the fact that they're undefeated. If they were not undefeated and they were not the number three team in the country and they were, say, the number 50th team in the country, nobody would really be talking about this as much as they are. But because it's Jim Harbaugh, because it's, you know, he was an NFL coach. He took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. His brother's an NFL coach. I mean, John Harbaugh just played last night on Thursday Night Football. He's been fielding questions about his brother, about this whole thing. And so it's just, there's a lot of drama and whatnot going on and surrounding this. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes from here with the NCAA's investigation now. Okay, since, again, we're on the topic of Michigan, their former head coach before Jim Harbaugh took over at one point was current, or I should say now, former San Diego State coach Brady Hoke. Well, current still, because he didn't get fired. He announced he would have been fired pretty much, but he is going to retire at the end of the season. His tenure, by the way, in Ann Arbor was not a good one. He's not looked at fondly for his time as head coach of Michigan. But again, the Aztecs this season are 3-7 and enduring one of the worst seasons in program history. They, of course, we know San Diego State just went to the finals in the March Madness tournament, right? So they're not really a, they're more of a basketball school, maybe a baseball school, something like that. Not something, not football isn't something you think of when you think of San Diego State. You think of those great basketball teams. Well, before this season, I believe they were on the verge of a Pac-12 invite. And now the conference has folded and you're left with Oregon State and Washington State. And now they control like $400 million of that conference money that they could do whatever they want with. So it's just baffling. I'm curious to see what ends up happening. Will they go to the Mountain West? Will they go somewhere else? Will they, I don't know. But yeah, it's crazy. And then here's a crazy move. Northwestern has removed their interim tag on David Braun, who will now become the permanent head coach at Northwestern. Did you guys know this? The Wildcats, take a guess what their record is right now. Because for one, I did not know this, but for one, I know that Rutgers destroyed them in week one, and I watched the game and I said, oh my God, if Rutgers is beating somebody like this, you must be pretty darn bad. And I know they had the fallout with Pat Fitzgerald and all of that stuff, but guess what? They are 5-5 after going 1-11 last season. This guy joined the team in January as the defensive coordinator. The turnaround has been nothing short of a miracle. So, yeah, he deserves to be the head coach. It's impressive. All right, additionally, over the weekend, we had Gotham FC win the NWSL Championship. That's the Women's Soccer League, if you didn't know. They edged out OL Reign. I don't know what the OL stands for, but they beat them 2-1 to capture their first NWSL title in franchise history. Why am I talking about women's professional soccer? Because one Megan Rapinoe, she suffered a non-contact Achilles tear in just the third minute of the final game of her career. So she will hopefully go off into the abyss and we'll never hear from her again because she is just one of those woke celebrities, athletes that just has no pulse on the world and doesn't know what the hell's going on and says stupid stuff. And this is a great example of it because she took the time after the game was over the match was over, she had the audacity to say that God doesn't exist, because if there was a God, he would not have gotten her injured in the third minute of the game. And the ego that it must take to think that with everything going on in the world, right, that God just has the time to worry about one Megan Rapinoe. And he's like, oh, you know, Megan Rapinoe, she deserves a torn Achilles today in the finals, in the final match of her career. So just give me a freaking break. So just I want to puke listening to her speak and say that and talk about how there, you know, this just proves that God doesn't exist. Get off your high horse. I mean, we're going to flip this now and talk about Kelly Oubre in the NBA Sixers wing. This man was struck by a car in Center City, Philadelphia. He's in stable condition, thank God. He's been discharged, couple broken bones, ribs, whatever. And do you think he's sitting there feeling sorry for himself, saying, man, God must not exist because I almost died and now I'm hurt and can't play? No, he's probably praying to God and thanking God that he didn't die because it could have been a lot worse. So, yeah, Megan, you could have, you know, life could be a lot more difficult. I'd love to be in your position. And yeah, God does exist. He's not just out there, you know, making sure you get hurt because he doesn't like you. All right? And just because you got hurt doesn't prove a damn thing. Okay, Brazilian fighter Alex Pereira made history in New York City, winning the light heavyweight title via TKO. That was UFC 295. By the way, Trump was in attendance. People go nuts for Trump at these UFC things. And I've been starting to watch a lot more Dana White TikToks and stuff. I've been seeing him on social media popping up. Man, I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of Dana White. And listen, it doesn't have anything to do with politics or anything like that, but Dana White is just speaking the truth. And that's why I like people that keep it real. So Dana White, I saw him on a podcast with Theo Von, and he was talking about how he posted something about Trump. So for those of you that don't know, Dana White in his early years, the UFC was an absolute failure. He was going to lose everything. He owned this UFC, and they didn't have venues to rent out to fight and different things like that. And Donald Trump, out of the kindness of his heart, called him up and offered him one of his venues, right? The Trump Taj Mahal or whatever it was, to have host his fights. And because nobody else was giving it to them. So they host the fights there, and Donald Trump stayed for almost every fight or did stay for every fight, which was hours and hours. And as the UFC continued to grow, Donald Trump would call Dana White and congratulate him. This is not made up. This is factual stuff. Dana White said this, right? So he owes him a lot because he gave him a start when nobody really believed in him. Everybody needs that one person. When nobody else believes in you, there's just that one person that sticks by you, whether it's a parent, whether it's a coach, whether it's a teacher, you name it, right? And for him, that was Donald Trump. So when Donald Trump was running for president, he called Dana White and he said, listen, I know, you know, basically I know I'm this big controversial character and person and everybody pretty much hates me and this could hurt your brand and this could hurt you and everything, but I would really love it if you would speak on my behalf at the Republican convention or whatever. And Dana White was told by everybody, you know, because right wing, you know, liberal Hollywood and all that stuff, everybody told him no. And Dana White's like, I can't tell this man no. I mean, he believed in me when nobody else would. He vouched for me. He was there along the way for my success to congratulate me. And so that's stuff that sticks in your head and sticks in your mind. And so when everyone told him not to do it, he said no. And he's a man of integrity, obviously, because if he would have turned his back on Donald Trump, that would have said a lot about his character and about who he is as a person. So Dana White did not turn his back on the man that helped start everything for him, and he did speak at it. So he said he posted something about Trump on his personal social media page, and one of the UFC's sponsors actually told him to take it down. And he said he told them to go F themselves is what he told Theo Von on the podcast, because essentially he's saying politics has nothing to do with our business relationship with the UFC and this sponsorship. And quite frankly, he was saying, I posted that on my personal page. So what I believe personally has nothing to do with the UFC, and it should not affect this spot. So basically, he said kick rocks. He didn't take it down. And whether he still has the sponsorship or not, I don't know. But this is the stuff that I love, because every politics aside, this has nothing to do with their relationship as a partnership, their sponsorship. They're all making money off this sponsorship. The UFC's making money. They're making money, you know, by running the ads and getting people to buy their products by watching the UFC. So that has nothing to do with politics. If people that are, you know, liberal, Democrat, whatever, that don't like Donald Trump, but they're huge UFC fans, are they going to stop watching UFC because, oh, Dana White is a Donald Trump fan because Dana White said that Donald Trump, you know, he owes everything to Donald Trump? If you are a logical human being and you have half a brain, okay, and I might be a Republican, whatever, it's besides the point. And I've always said this, and I'll say it again. If you are a logical human being that can think for themselves, many people can't, I don't know, but how can you be mad at somebody who was going to stand up and vouch for Trump when Trump saved his life, essentially, saved his business, helped build his business? I mean, you can't be mad at somebody for that. I couldn't be mad if Joe Biden or Barack Obama did that for him, just replaced Trump with, like, that would not bother me in the least bit. And I just, it boggles my mind that people could hate someone so much as Trump, right, as they hate him. Because he keeps it real. He says it how it is. I didn't vote for Barack Obama. Wasn't a huge, you know, wasn't a fan of him. I liked, you know, how he would go on ESPN and Barackatology, and he would pick his, you know, make his picks for the NCAA tournament and stuff like that. But if I ever saw him in person, I'm sure he's a really cool guy. If I ever got to meet him, I wouldn't be like, oh man, I hate you. I didn't vote for you. You were the worst president ever. I mean, really? But people are like that. People are crazy. So, yeah, you can't knock the man. So I would love, man, if Dana White wanted to run for president one day, I would love to see that, because he's going to keep it real and he's not going to sugarcoat things and he's not going to sit there and talk in circles and say everything's running peaches and cream and everything's great when the economy's in the toilet like it is right now. So, yeah, went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but the UFC is what it is today because of Dana White and because of Donald Trump, whether you like it or not. So if you haven't seen that Theo Von episode, though, I highly recommend it, because they got into a bit. Theo Von said a sponsor told him to take down a podcast episode with where they had RFK Jr. on, who, by the way, is a Democrat, but the Democrats don't like him because he's a free thinker and he thinks outside the box of what their party line is. So it was Peloton, the sponsor, that told him to take down an old episode with RFK. And when Dana White found this out, he said, we are absolutely taking the Pelotons out of our UFC gym. So Peloton screwed themselves in the long run. And that's what I love, because these woke Hollywood, you know, companies and celebrities and everything, this is the way you get to them, is the bottom line. Who you have on a podcast or what you believe in politically has nothing to do with work, jobs, you name it. I have a friend who works at a company, and all they do, all his boss does, is bash Donald Trump. What does that have to do with your job? You work for X company and you're bashing Donald Trump to your employees? It's unbelievable. Could you imagine if that was the other way around? It's crazy the world we live in. So we're such a divided nation, but it's crazy. You want to believe in or vote for Biden, and I'm going to vote for Trump, or whatever the case may be. Who you vote for, who you want to vote for, I'll vote for who I want to vote for. But I'm not going to not work with you on a business level or whatever, because I don't like that you voted for Biden or you voted for Trump and I voted for Biden or whoever the nominees end up being, whatever. It's crazy to think that way. It is crazy the world we live in sometimes. But yeah, that's that. All right, let's talk some NFL. CJ Stroud is now second in the NFL in passing yards, and he legitimately, I'm not just saying that, being facetious. No, he legitimately has a chance to win MVP. After just 9 games, he's top 10 in passing yards. He's number 2. He's top 10 in touchdowns, QBR, QB rating. They beat the Bengals. It was his second straight game where he had a game-winning drive. Remember, of course, against the Bucs. Yep, second one in a row. He has just he did throw a touchdown this one. Oh, poor stupid freaking CJ Stroud, man. He threw an interception. Yeah, you know he has 15 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, I believe, on the entire season. That is unbelievably unheard of for a rookie quarterback. He is just pushing through that glass ceiling. I love it. I love to see it. And I read an unbelievable article about CJ Stroud, whose father has been in prison since he was, I believe, 13, and he just started building his relationship back with him again. His father was, it was his third strike, so he didn't do anything like crazy, like kill somebody or anything, but he's in jail for something like 30 plus years. But it was a very good article about CJ Stroud, who, by the way, is just 22 years old. Speaking of young quarterbacks, we welcomed Kyler Murray back this past weekend. He made his season debut after about almost a full calendar year due to an ACL tear he suffered in, what, week 14 last season, if my mind serves me correctly. No, it wouldn't have been week 14, would it? No, because if it was a full calendar year, that would have been week 9 or so. Let's see. When did Kyler Murray injure his ACL? Let's see. I don't know if I have that number. Anyway, it's been about a full calendar year. That's all you need to know. And what did Kyler Murray do? Oh, he led his team on a game-winning drive against the 4-6 Falcons. Granted, not a great football team. The Falcons are in shambles at the moment, but gave the Cardinals just their second win of the year, and that is also why the Cardinals are my bet for this week. They are a team that I believe is going to go to Houston. Houston is 5-4. Houston is sitting in that third wild card spot, which is just unbelievable. D'Amico Ryan's coach of the year. If they should make the playoffs, holy crap. But guess what? It's the Houston Texans. They will not make the playoffs. They will not keep this up. I picked up on my fantasy team Noah Brown, who's just unbelievable the last two games. And all of a sudden, he's missed practice for two straight days or three straight days, and he's been ruled out today. So he will not play Sunday. They'll get Nico Collins back, though, but he's still banged up a little bit. You don't know if he's 100% or not. They're getting 6 points. That is a lot for a Texans team in a rebuild with a rookie quarterback to be favored by 6 points. And yes, it's the Cardinals, but this ain't the same Cardinals from all season. This Cardinals team has Kyler Murray now, and good luck stopping Kyler Murray from running around and going crazy. So that's why I'm going to go on a little bit of a limb here. I really don't think it's that crazy to say that the Cardinals are going to win. I parlayed the Cardinals and the Steelers, two road teams that I think are going to win. And the reason is because Houston, everything that they've been doing, everything is just clicking for them. And I think it's time for that typical letdown. It's a rookie quarterback. As much as I like Stroud, maybe he's not the one that blows it or anything, but I just think that they are going to get beat. They're the third wild card team right now. This is probably the first week, I want to say, that they are in the driver's seat. They are the number three wild card team, and they are probably crapping their pants or thinking. They're probably, these young guys are probably thinking too far ahead, like, oh my God, if we just do this, if we win this game, and then they're picking out games on the calendar that they could win and things of that nature, and they're like, wow, we're going to be in the playoffs. And they're thinking too far ahead, and they're overthinking things, and they're not worried so much on the present. And I think that's going to bite them in the butt, and I think this game could be a lot closer than 6 points. I mean, I would take the points and walk away. That's a lock, in my opinion, that they keep this within six. But I like them to win it outright. I really do. I think Kyler Murray is an X factor. Now, I'm not his biggest fan or anything, Kyler Murray, but, and listen, D'Amico Ryans has faced Kyler Murray before when he was with San Francisco, but I believe Kyler Murray beat him. So, something to think about. I'm taking the Cardinals. The Ravens, they didn't collapse last night, but they did collapse a week ago against the Browns. Multiple 14-point leads in this game, including one in the fourth quarter, and they blew it. It's just unbelievable. And Deshaun Watson, who has been up and down all season, led them on a game-winning drive, and the Browns improved to 6-3. But their season is likely over because we found out that Deshaun Watson is now out for the year. Deshaun Watson, by the way, has made about $100 million guaranteed already from this contract, and he's barely played and he's barely performed. Apparently, Deshaun Watson told medical staff after the game that he felt some discomfort in his shoulder, his throwing shoulder, in the first half, gutted through it. They did some imaging and whatnot. An MRI revealed a displaced fracture to the glenoid in his shoulder. The MRI also actually showed a high ankle sprain in his left ankle. So he is out for the year. They determined he needed immediate surgery. And, of course, they expect him back at the beginning of next season. But, yeah, it was actually the first time since week three of 2018 in Baker Mayfield's debut that the Browns overcame a 14-plus deficit to win. I remember that game like it was yesterday because the Browns came back to beat my Jets on a Thursday night game. Ugh. Where are we at now? Dorian Thompson-Robinson will start against Pittsburgh, not P.J. Walker. Again, that's what I love the Steelers in this one. I just do. DTR was thrust into action in week four. It's not going to be P.J. Walker for these two reasons, and I think it's the wrong reason, but I'm not going to knock it. Here we go. P.J. Walker, I believe, won two games as quarterback. He beat the 49ers, and then they got another win against somebody that they probably shouldn't have beat. I'm drawing a blank here. But anyway, Dorian Thompson-Robinson was thrust into action in week four against the Ravens, and he threw three picks and fumbled once. He was great in the preseason, one of the best in the preseason, but that's against, you know, guys that aren't employed right now. Now he's going up against Pittsburgh's stout defense and J.J. Watt. I think this is a recipe for disaster. So that is why I'm taking the Steelers. All right, scoring has been mostly down across the board, but there was no shortage of it in L.A. This was probably the best game of the week. The Chargers and Lions went toe-to-toe all game with neither team able to pull away. And it's great because the Chargers always find ways to lose these type of games. The Lions would go score a touchdown, then the Chargers would come right back, but you just knew the other shoe was going to drop with the Chargers. It was a very enthralling game, and it came down to a Riley Patterson game winner as time expired to give the Lions the 41-38 victory and improve to 7-2. I was stupid enough to bet against Josh Dobbs. This was not my pick. I listened to the Phantom Swami and some others, and I went with New Orleans on the road, and I did not like that pick, but it didn't matter because the Ravens didn't cover the spread for me. They lost outright. So it wouldn't have mattered. Anyway, the Vikings had a 24-3 halftime lead, and the Saints ended up having to bring in Jameis Winston because Derek Carr got hurt. Wasn't good anyway. I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. And you got to see some of the magic that is Jameis Winston, why it's so frustrating. Saints rattle off 16 straight. They're down a touchdown, but the Vikings hold on because, shocker, Jameis Winston threw a horrendous interception. The Vikings started 1-4, lost Kirk Cousins 2 games ago, and now they are 6-4. They have won 5 straight games. So this is what coaching will do. The Vikings have a great coach in Kevin O'Connell. He's still unproven, but he's obviously very good if he's able to do this. And you know, what they were able to do last year, even though they lost that first game of the playoffs to the Giants. He's obviously a very good coach. Your quarterback goes down, and you're still winning games 5 straight. You start 1-4, and you still win 5 straight. 1-4 start, most teams would pack it in, but not the Vikings. They play hard. They put up points. Then you have a Jets team. You lose Aaron Rodgers 4 plays in, and you go into Sunday now, having not scored on your last 35 drives. This could be the 3rd straight game you don't put up a single offensive touchdown. The numbers are disgusting, awful. No matter who the quarterback is, in my opinion, you wouldn't win games. Because as quote-unquote good as Mike White was the last 2 years, he really wasn't that good. And I blame it all on coaching. And that's why I laugh when everyone says, oh, give us a new quarterback or put another quarterback in there and give them a shot or go sign Carson Wentz or this or that. Nathaniel Hackett's not good. He's the problem. They don't put men in motion. They are 30th in the NFL in pre-snap motion. You know who puts men in motion all the time? Teams like the Chiefs, teams like the Eagles, teams like the Dolphins, the number one team in your division, the Dolphins. The reason they don't do pre-snap motion is because, oh, guess what? Aaron Rodgers doesn't like pre-snap motion. So that's why. But guess what? Aaron Rodgers was lost 4 plays into the season. It's now week 11. You need to put guys in motion and build this, mold this offense around Zach Wilson. And the Jets have not done that. And I don't think they would have done that no matter who the quarterback was. So whatever. If there was any doubt about the 49ers, my God, that went out the window. And I'm not going to lie, I had some creeping doubts in my head. And I wanted to bet this, but then I got a little nervous and I didn't. After losing 3 straight, they came off the bye, went to Duval County, and annihilated the Jaguars, who came into the game as the hottest team in the NFL, having won 5 straight. Well, guess what? The Jaguars proved that they're not ready for the big time, that they can't compete with the big boys. The 49ers looked very good. Brock Purdy especially bounced back, looked very good, and they got the win. Unfortunately, they tried so hard at the very end to get Christian McCaffrey that touchdown, which would have given him 18 straight games with the touchdown, and he was not able to get it. He was stopped short on fourth down, fourth and goal. How about the Patriots? Well, they are a mess. A missed 35-yard field goal and 2 Mac Jones INTs led to Bill Belichick doing the unthinkable. He benched Mac Jones with under 2 minutes left on the final possession, down 10-6 in Frankfurt, Germany, against the Colts. Bailey Zappe came in, he had the patch drive, and they just converted a 4th-and-1, and then they go fake spike. And what does Bailey Zappe do? Throws into, like, quadruple coverage over the middle for an easy pick, sinking the Pats to 2-8. Have to wonder. I mean, there's reports all over the place that Belichick will not be coaching in New England next year. And rumors have it, he might be going to the Giants. Just keep that in mind. For the second straight week, my Jets failed me miserably. I was this close, so close to betting them to win this game, but thank God I didn't. 11 straight quarters now without a touchdown. Zach Wilson didn't play bad by any means, but with under 2 minutes to go, he threw that horrific interception inside the Raiders 20. It was bad, yes, he kind of stared him down, but come on, Lazard. Go get the ball. Don't just sit there and let him pick it off. You have to try to come back to the ball and try to knock it away or try to get the ball. There was no sense of urgency. I don't blame this game on Zach Wilson solely. He lost us the game with that play. Sure, you want to say that, fine, but he also had gave us a chance at the very end of the game, scrambled out of an unbelievable sack and threw up a ball 30 yards perfectly into the end zone for Garrett Wilson, who could have caught the game-winning Hail Mary touchdown, but Conklin freaking batted it down. And yes, the Jets are not a good team at the moment. They could show, they've shown us flashes against the Eagles, against the Chiefs, against, you know, the Broncos, and maybe they'll get a spark. They're playing Buffalo, who's in shambles. They seem to have Buffalo's number, so we'll see. They're not good at the moment, but if they beat Buffalo, I'll say they're good and they have a chance. But the Jets lost to the Raiders 16-12. Sunday set the record for the most walk-off field goals with 5 in 1 week. Well, it was topped because we had a 6th on Monday Night Football. I'll get into that in a second. The Houston Texans, Cleveland Browns, Detroit Lions, Seattle Seahawks, and Arizona Cardinals and Broncos all walked off with wins as time expired on field goals. Can you imagine that? 6 in 1 week. So with that being said, let's talk about the Monday Night Football game. Broncos were 7.5-point underdogs against Buffalo, and they won outright. They controlled the game most of the way, scored got up 3-0 on the scoreboard, their opening drive, and with 24 seconds left. So, all right, there were 2 missed extra points in this game. One was flat out missed. Another one, the holder botched the snap and they didn't get it. So they were only up 6. So the Bills went down, they scored, kicked the extra point. Bills went up 1. They left the Broncos too much time. Russell Wilson on like a 3rd down, he just was getting blitzed, throws it up short. He knows the defender can't see. They get a pass interference call. It was a very smart, savvy veteran move, and the Broncos continued to move on down the field. But with 24 seconds left, they should have just kicked the field goal. That's what Eli, that's what Peyton were saying on the Manning cast. They decided to kneel the ball, center it, and then rush the field goal unit on, which, by the way, they had plenty of time to get the field goal unit out there, but it's a lot of moving parts, you know, puts pressure on a lot of people. And guess what? Will Lutz missed the field goal. But wait, 12 men on defense. 12 men on defense. 5-yard penalty, re-kick with 4 seconds. Will Lutz nails it down the middle. Broncos win by 2. Can you imagine? So heads are rolling in Buffalo. Things are not going well. So naturally, because the defense blew the game, naturally we're going to fire the offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey. They fired Ken Dorsey on Tuesday, which Ken Dorsey is the scapegoat. But again, they did this because Sean McDermott is feeling the pressure. He's going to be out of a job. The Bills probably won't make the playoffs. McDermott's going to be out of a job, and this was him trying to save said job. It's clear as day what's going on here. So now Joe Brady takes over as interim offense coordinator. Joe Brady, who made Joe Burrow at LSU, went to Carolina, hasn't really had much success in the NFL. He will now call the plays, and I'm just chomping at the bit, because he's going to try everything and anything and everything to stifle this Jets defense. And good luck, because the Broncos with Pat Surtain shut down Stephon Diggs, whose brother has been chirping about getting him out of Buffalo, and Stephon Diggs, who's Pat, you know, there's been rumors all offseason. I mean, he wanted to leave Minnesota because he said he wasn't getting the ball enough, and Josh Allen made him a top 3, top 4 receiver. And now he's still complaining. So they got all sorts of issues in Buffalo. And good luck going against this Jets defense, man. That's all I got to tell you. Yes, we're second worst against the run, but the Bills are not a team that relies on the run. That's kind of their problem, too. Sometimes they need to just take what's given to them. And James Cook was running the ball pretty good, but they continued to turn the ball over. Josh Allen continued to throw interceptions. And it's a problem. And I like my Jets' chances. I don't know if that will win, but we'll be in this game. This is going to be closer than the 7 suggests, or the 6, whatever it's at. All right. Justin Fields, he will return after missing 4 games with a thumb injury. The Bears will face the Lions on the road this week and are currently 7.5-point underdogs. I love the Lions in this one. This is going to be my big play of the week. This is my lock of the week. Take the Lions -7.5. I'm not too worried about the hook, but if you don't want to get screwed by the hook, then take the 6, you know, just drop it a point to 6.5, and you'll be fine. But I would put a lot of money on the Lions to cover this one. All right, if last night's game was any indication of how this week will go, it's not good. Not good. We lost 2 stars. The Ravens ended up winning by 14. What was it, 34-20 or something? Gus Edwards, by the way, 2 more touchdowns. He's got 10 on the season, which is second only to Raheem Mostert. First, Mark Andrews went down. He caught a pass and then tried to scramble to get to the end zone. And it was one of those like hip check tackles that they were talking about on the broadcast that they're trying to eliminate. Got his ankle rolled up on and it was bad. He was on crutches. His season is over. The big blow was to my fantasy team and to the rest of the Bengals fan base and the rest of the NFL, because we're all losers in this one. Joe Burrow, he throws a touchdown to Joe Mixon out of the backfield on like a third down play or something. And you're like, okay, cool. He gets me some fantasy points. We're rocking and rolling. And you don't think anything of it, right? I don't think anything of it. You don't think anything of it. I think they came back from commercial or something, and all of a sudden they're like, all right, here's the replay. Joe Burrow, and he just grabs his hand after the play is over. And now he's on the sideline. You don't know what's going on, what's wrong with his hand, his wrist. Then they start talking about this video that surfaced when they were getting off the team bus or the plane, and Joe Burrow had a compression sleeve, or almost like when you sprain your wrist or break a bone, they don't cast it fully. They put that soft cast on. It looked like he had something like that on. Well, then it was deleted by Bengals social media. And by the way, Joe Burrow was not on any injury reports leading up to this game. So one, Dave Portnoy bet $110,000 on the Bengals money line, I believe, or with the spread, whatever it was. And now he said, I don't know how true this is or if he's for real or not, but I wouldn't put it past him. He said he's going to file a class action lawsuit. I know the NFL is also looking into why he was not on the injury report. If he wasn't injured, why was this video deleted with him, you know, having something wrapped on his wrist? It's crazy. It's crazy. He's claiming, other players are claiming, that when there was a play earlier on the drive or the drive before the touchdown where Jadeveon Clowney tackled him and on a sack, and he claims he heard a pop. Other players were saying that he said he felt a pop or whatever, but it's a ligament in his wrist. He's done for the season. Joe Burrow's gone. The amount of quarterbacks that we've lost for the season, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins, Daniels, it's crazy the amount of quarterbacks that have been knocked out for the season, and just players, big time players overall too. So just really bad. I have a clip here of Joe Burrow talking about the injury. Take a listen.
You know, I've been through stuff like this before, so it's nothing new. You know, like I said, it's football. Stuff like this happens. You just gotta learn to live with it. And you know, I've talked a lot about leaning on your support system. I got a great support system, great friends, great family. Help me get through it, great teammates. You know, I'll be around here. So not ideal, but, you know, I've got what it takes, and the people around me got what it takes to get it done.
What have your teammates been saying to
you? They've been nothing but supportive. Love those guys. They're going to keep fighting, get wins, make playoffs. You know, Jake's going to play great. Jake played really well yesterday when he got his chance, and that was off of no practice, so he's going to continue to get better and better. I'm excited to watch him too.
On the play when you landed, the play before the touchdown pass,
was there a force from a defender that fell on your wrist as well? Was it just all your body?
I don't really even remember. You know, I didn't even really realize that I fell on it before they showed me the video. You know, in the heat of it like that, it's hard to, sometimes you don't even feel what's happening to your body in those situations just because of the moment and the adrenaline. So it's hard to even.
I just don't know what to make of this injury because I saw a video of him pregame warming up, you know, in street clothes or whatever, and he didn't appear to be bothered by any sort of injury. He was making all the throws, and throughout the game, the beginning of the game, he was making throws perfectly fine. He had a nice little, it was almost like a wheel route to the tight end. He put it up, the tight end went up, caught it. There was no limitations to his throws, so it was very weird that out of nowhere on this throw to Mixon for the touchdown, he just, this ligament gives in his wrist. So was it really a hit earlier in the game? Or as this compression sleeve thing unfolds or this video comes out that was deleted, why was this video deleted if it wasn't that big of a deal, right? I'm leaning towards this being an injury prior, because why else would they delete the video evidence if there was nothing to show for it? If it was just, oh, you know, Joe Burrow because of, you know, things could swell up in the air and, you know, he's just being precautious because everything, you know, you don't want to take a chance. That's my throwing hand, whatever. I wouldn't really buy that, but if that's what they wanted to feed us. But by deleting the evidence, that's guilt. I mean, they're admitting guilt. So, yeah, this is going to be interesting how they come down on the Bengals. I know people are clamoring to take a pick away from them. That's not going to happen. Whether they do anything to discipline them remains to be seen, but we'll keep an eye on it. Now, I think he's delusional when he says that, you know, Jake Browning is going to help them and they're going to go make the playoffs. That's not happening. Sorry, it's just not. All right, let's switch things up. Let's talk some NBA. Sunday night, Tyrese Maxey. Man, is he loving the fact that James Harden is out of town. I think they're just, yeah, they've lost a couple in a row or whatever, but they started 8-1. It's bound to happen. Tyrese Maxey dropped 50, a career high, by the way. He's on my fantasy team, just loving it. 137-126, they beat the Pacers, who have been pretty good. Meanwhile, Harden's Clippers have lost 6 straight and 5 since he arrived, most recently losing to the 2-8 Grizzlies, who are off to their worst start in 20 years, mind you. Sorry, James, you ain't the beard, you're not the system, you're the problem, which Mavs announcer Brian Damaris so eloquently stated. This was beautifully said.
Because, James, you're not the beard, you're not the system, you're the problem.
This was like a 2.5-minute diatribe of just this man eviscerating James Harden, and that was the best line of it all. You know, he talked about just everything. I'm not going to get into it. Go watch the full video, but that was the best line. James, you're not the beard, you're not the system, you're the problem. And referring to James Harden saying, I'm the system, you know? So that was great. Glad someone took it to him. All right, just some notes on the Big Four since James Harden's arrival. This is unbelievable. With Harden not in the starting lineup, and I believe Robert Covington, that starting lineup is like the most efficient offensively in the league. But with James Harden, they're the worst. So some numbers. Harden, since he's been here, 13.5 points, 5 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 2.5 turnovers per game, 47.2, 36.8, 100% from the free throw line. You get the number. Shooting splits, minus 67 on the court. Kawhi Leonard, before James Harden got there, 23 points, a plus 80. Since he's been there, 18.8 points per game, minus 35. Now for Paul George, before Harden got there, averaging 28.8 and plus 87. Since, he's averaging 17 points and has a minus 26 rating. Russell Westbrook, before, 57.2 true shooting percentage, plus 64. Since, his numbers have dropped, 48.2 true shooting percentage and a minus 28. This is not working. It's never going to work. Nobody expected it to work except, I guess, James Harden and the delusional Clippers. And we're just watching this fire erupt in front of our eyes, and I'm loving it. Okay, Bucks forward Jay Crowder. He will miss about 8 weeks after undergoing groin surgery. It is a big blow considering Damian Lillard missed a couple games in a row, and they were kind of faltering at 6-4. But Damian Lillard has since come back, and he went off last night for like 20-something in the first half, I believe. All right, so if you live on the East Coast like myself, you might have missed this live or what happened Tuesday night in San Francisco. Less than 2 minutes into the game, an absolute brawl ensued. The score was 0-0. We're talking Warriors, T-Wolves. It all started with Klay Thompson and Jaden McDaniels. They started, I don't know who grabbed who first, but they started grabbing each other's jerseys like from the neck area, and they wouldn't let go as they're going up and down the court. So then all of a sudden, Rudy Gobert gets in there, and he grabs Klay Thompson, and then you just have Draymond Green coming out of the woodwork. Here we go, Draymond Green, and he comes flying in, and he just puts the WWE move on Gobert and just chokes him. Listen to this.
And so we're scoreless. We'll stay 0-0 the first 2 minutes. And then look at Klay Thompson and McDaniels. What is going on with that?
Wow.
You've got a full-on fracas going on. Draymond came in to defend Klay. This got out of hand very quickly.
Look at Klay Thompson's jersey. It's ripped up. That's more than a scuffle.
We're going to have to go to replay and look at all of this, but Klay Thompson's never been involved in anything like that. What was Jaden McDaniels doing?
They were going at each other's heads. That was serious.
I mean, as you said, Klay's going to need a whole new jersey. Klay is as mild-mannered a player as we've ever seen.
They're just running down the floor, and they got tangled up. I want to see who initiated it first, though. Here's a look at it. So they're kind of coming together. Klay's boxing him out, puts his hand on his jersey. Jaden McDaniels puts his hand on his jersey. Now they're swinging each other around. Gobert gets in there. Draymond's got him in a headlock. There's a lot happening here. Well, there were no punches thrown, which is good. In the NBA, it doesn't matter even if you make contact. If you swing at somebody, you're gone.
Okay, look at him on the left side over here. Yeah, they just... Klay had his hand on him trying to, like, box him out. And then
they were swinging each other around. I mean, Warriors, it's clear. They want to send a message that you're not going to bully us. We're going to be physical. We're going to match your physicality and surpass it if we can. And Klay is getting the new jersey.
Whoa. Yeah, there was a heavy-duty reaction to both guys grabbing each other.
All right, so Klay didn't need to put the new jersey on there because he was actually ejected, which I kind of disagreed with. I know Steve Kerr after the game said it was ridiculous that he got ejected because Jaden McDaniels was the one grabbing him first because Klay was trying to push him going back down the court, and nothing really atypical for an NBA player or you know, to get a little physical like that. But then Jaden McDaniels just grabs his jersey, rips him down the court, and then was kind of swinging at him, I thought. So I thought McDaniels should have been ejected. Obviously, Draymond for chokeholding Rudy Gobert. But all three actually got ejected. And so now you're without Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Steph Curry was not in this game. And they still somehow almost won. They lost to Minnesota by 3, 104-101, but it was just crazy. So Draymond Green has been actually suspended for 5 games after this whole thing, which not surprising, his track record and everything. So, yeah, again, not shocking. But here's the interesting thing. Rudy Gobert came for Draymond, and I think he won and took the internet by storm. Listen to this. So Rudy Gobert said, this is a quote, "Every time Steph doesn't play, he doesn't want to play without his guy Steph. So he does anything he can to get ejected." So he is actually, he's saying, this is a bold statement, Rudy Gobert is saying that when Steph Curry isn't on the court, Draymond Green tries to get ejected because he knows that he's not good without Steph, is basically what he's saying. Well, is he right? I mean, that's a pretty crazy thing to say. Well, guess what? 7 of Draymond's last 11 ejections came in games where Steph did not play. What's even stranger, Draymond's first ejection of those 7 occurred back in 2019 in a, you guessed it, a Warriors loss against the Jazz and Rudy Gobert. I think he's scared of Rudy. I don't know. Just something to think about. Okay, former NBA players Glenn Big Baby Davis and William Bynum were convicted yesterday of defrauding the NBA Players Health and Benefit Welfare Plan. Davis, 37, played 8 seasons in the NBA. We all know who Big Baby Glenn Davis is. He played at LSU, won an NBA title with the Boston Celtics. His last season was in 2014-15 with the Clippers. Bynum, less known guy, he's 40 years old, played in the NBA during the 2014-15 season with the Wizards. Basically, they submitted all this to the insurance that they had all this dental and chiropractic work done and all this stuff to the tune of millions of dollars. And none of it was actually, they never actually went to the doctors. So, yeah. In other news, Miles Bridges will return for the Hornets tonight. He will play off the bench. He missed all of last season and the first 10 games of this season due to a domestic violence case and even faces a court date for allegedly violating a protective order. And the Hornets are saying, we don't care. We're putting him on the court because we're just a bad team and we need help. All right, let's talk some baseball. Corbin Carroll, Gunnar Henderson, your NL and AL rookies of the year, neither comes as a surprise. Corbin Carroll helped the Diamondbacks to the World Series, and Gunnar Henderson helped the O's to the best record in the AL. Right along those lines, Baltimore Orioles manager Brandon Hyde, he won AL Manager of the Year. Miami's Skip Schumacher won NL Manager of the Year. Also taking home hardware, Blake Snell and Gerrit Cole won AL and NL Cy Young Awards. And I just want to talk about Snell for a second. I take a little bit of issue with the way he celebrated this. So Blake Snell had an actual watch party as if it was a draft party. Blake Snell, you've won a Cy Young before. This is your second one. Why do you need a full-on watch party with like 50 people? It was bizarre. I could not believe it. And many argued that maybe he didn't even deserve to win the Cy Young because he threw fewer innings than almost anybody ever to win a Cy Young. I think only two guys threw fewer innings than him ever to win a Cy Young, and Verlander was one of them last year. He walked a ton of people. That was something to consider. And his strikeout numbers weren't crazy, but he wins the Cy Young. Why are you having a full-on watch party? Gerrit Cole was just there with his wife being interviewed virtually, you know, over like Zoom or whatever. Respectfully, distasteful. Not a Blake Snell fan. I'm just not. All right, and of course, you know, Blake Snell, Padres guy. Speaking of the Padres, some tragedy hit their organization. San Diego's owner, Peter Seidler, passed away at just 63 years of age on Tuesday. He had missed the last part of the season due to some health complications, but his condition had not been publicly reported. Even after his death, his family requested that the cause remain private. All right, we made some tweaks to the rules in baseball last season. It was apparently a huge success. Got the average game time down to 240, but MLB wants to get that down to 2 hours and 30 minutes. They think the games towards the end of the season were just dragged out too long. So they are dropping the pitch clock time from 20 seconds to 18 seconds, but only when runners are on base, it's going to drop to 18 seconds. The Milwaukee Brewers promoted bench coach Pat Murphy to manager. And as expected, team owners unanimously approved the Oakland A's relocation to Las Vegas. There is some controversy there. School teachers, the teachers union in Nevada, they're mounting a legal battle to oppose the $380 million in public spending required to build the new stadium. I believe it's going to cost in total over $1.8 billion to build it. And also, the A's are not even scheduled to have the stadium ready to go until 2028. And after next season, their lease runs out with the Oakland Coliseum. So who knows where they're going to be playing games for the next few seasons. Probably their minor league affiliate, their AAA affiliate. Crazy. Unanimous MVPs in both leagues. Ronald Acuna Jr., congrats. Shohei Ohtani, congrats. That was a bit obvious. It came out today also, a little while ago, that the Braves will host the 2025 All-Star Game. If you remember back 4 years ago, the league pulled the game over voting laws in Georgia. In other news, Carissa Thompson is making headlines because she went on a podcast and she admitted that when she used to be a sideline reporter, that she would make up reports. just make it up. She said the coaches wouldn't come out for after halftime, so she would just have to make stuff up. Now, what she said, her explanation was she never said anything that wasn't true. But the problem is she would say, oh, yeah, I just talked to, coach, I just talked to John Harbaugh or Zach Taylor. And he said that, we've been really bad on third down. We've got to find a way to convert some third downs, which everyone else at home knows it. The stats show it. But she didn't actually talk to Zach Taylor or Harbaugh, and they didn't actually tell her these things. So she's in a whole lot of hot water, whole big mess. Molly McGrath was coming for her and different things and all this stuff and whatever. Bit of controversy there. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, before I get to On This Date in sports, let's talk about some big matchups we've got, and then I'll wrap this up. So we've got Colorado on tonight. They're playing Washington State, but we've got some big top 25 games this week. We've got Michigan, of course, no Harbaugh again. They're on the road at Maryland. Maryland's not a bad team, 6-4. They dropped a few in a row. We'll see what that looks like. Michigan is 19.5 point favorites. Number 8, Alabama. They'll look to get to 10-1 against a 7-3 Chattanooga team. I don't even have a line on that game. It's probably so big. You have number 10, Louisville on the road at Miami. Excuse me, that's a close one. That's a one-point spread. That's a bit of a pick 'em. I don't know. I don't know enough about Louisville to trust this, but part of me wants to lean Miami here. Ole Miss, let's see if they could bounce back against Louisiana Monroe. That's a 37.5-point spread. Yikes. You got Oklahoma on the road at BYU. Oklahoma's 24.5-point favorites. I don't know if I like that number. It's a bit high. Arizona, Utah. I don't know much about Arizona. They've got three losses, and they're ranked 17th in the country, which is a little bit surprising. I can't watch it anyway. It's on Pac-12 Network. The big one at 3:30, you've got Georgia on the road at Tennessee. Spread in this one was 10.5. Maybe it's down to 9.5 now. I don't know if I wanted to lean Tennessee. Coming off a big loss, Georgia coming off a big win. That has not worked in my favor this year, so I'd probably push Georgia. They've looked the best that they've been in a while. 16, Iowa will host Illinois at 3:30. Iowa's 3-point favorites. Take the under. North Carolina, after their double OT win, they'll go on the road to Clemson. And I love me some Clemson here. Clemson's actually favored by 7.5. I don't know if they win by that much, but keep an eye on that. Ohio State, they're 10-0, right? They're 27.5-point home favorites to Minnesota. You've got number 6, Oregon, on the road at Arizona State. They're 24.5-point favorites. Number 23, Oklahoma State, after that brutal game last week, they will take on Houston on the road. Florida State, they're playing North Alabama. You got Kansas, they're in the poll this week at 25th. They'll take on a good Kansas State team, ranked 21st. Kansas is at home in this one, and Kansas State is actually favored by 9.5. Give me Kansas here with the points. Number 11, Oregon State. Number 5, Washington. This should be a great one. That's at 7:30 on ABC. Oregon State is hosting Washington in this one. Then you got Missouri. They're number 9 in the country, up to 9th. They're hosting Florida. They should cover this 11.5-point spread. Texas on the road against Iowa State. And LSU, let's see if Jaden Daniels can keep it going and continue this little bit of a Heisman run, if you will, because his numbers are through the roof. All right, let's get to On This Date in sports. This is a wild one. Are you ready for this one? Let me find it. Where did it go? Hold on. Oh, I know why, because I'm looking in the wrong spot. Okay, On This Date in sports. So November 17th, 2022, just a year ago, unranked Kansas State beat number 4 Iowa, women's basketball we're talking, so Caitlin Clark. Well, then yesterday, so just a year later, just about a year, right? One day to the year. On November 16th, 2023, unranked Kansas State beat number 2 Iowa. The Wildcats became the first team in the last 25 years to be unranked and defeat the same AP top 5 team in back back-to-back years. So that's making me feel good because guess what? The Jets have the Bills' number, just like unranked Kansas State. And I think that the Jets, this is an omen. This is a sign, a good sign, that the Jets will go into Buffalo and they will get that win. You can book it. You can put it on the board. Just like that. All right, we're an hour and 20 in. I'm going to let you guys go. It's after 8 o'clock. We've got some NBA games on. We've got some football games on tonight. It's going to be a good, fun week 11. I got banged up with my picks. You know, last week did not win some money. I gave you some good ones this week, all right? I'll have the, we'll be doing a Through the Ringer podcast episode. That will be dropping tomorrow afternoon. We're going to get that done in the afternoon. And I think this might be the final week that the Phantom Swami's on nights at the hospital. So hopefully we can get that back to a better time before the Thursday games, because I would have taken the Ravens probably last night as one of my picks, and I didn't get to choose them. So that's that. All right. We're done. With that being said, enjoy the weekend, ladies and gentlemen. It was 65, almost 70 degrees here in Jersey today, which was just bizarre, but I don't know if that's going to hold up. Should be decent enough, though, this weekend. Anyway, I'm the Pody, signing off. I'll see everybody when I see you. I don't know. I told you Friday I won't have an episode probably because of the Jets game and Thanksgiving and all that stuff, so I'll try to maybe get back on a Saturday and preview, at least get you a preview episode for Sunday. All right, Pody out.